I want to start off this morning with a very unscientific poll. How many of you are busy? How many busy people? If there's one word that describes modern life, it's busy. We are a busy people. If you run into somebody you haven't seen in a long time and you ask them how they're doing, there's a good chance they're going to tell you, I'm busy. I'm so busy. I'm slammed, barely keeping my head above water. Now, we say that we're busy like a complaint, but we also wear it like a badge of honor. Right? Because if we're busy, then obviously we must be important, right? If I'm busy, then I'm doing something that matters. Columnist Tom Kreider, in his article, The Busy Trap, writes, "Busyness serves as a kind of existential reassurance, a hedge against emptiness. Obviously, your life cannot be silly or trivial or meaningless if you are so busy." And our lives aren't just busy, they're noisy. We work noisy jobs. We have noisy kids. We work in our yards and our garages with noisy tools. And if you live or work in town, then even your quiet moments can be filled with noise. The sound of traffic, the wail of sirens, and that evil spawn of Satan and OSHA, the backup beeper. Hate that thing. And so what do we do to combat this noise? We put earbuds in our ears so that we can pump our skulls full of noise of our own choosing. Noise. George Prochnik, author of In Search of Silence, writes, "We're seeing noise tied to a host of problems of the age. Problems of attention, aggression, insomnia, and general stress. Noise is now the default position as a society." And think about it. Daily life is now filled with notifications, alerts, and alarms, a never-ending parade of beeps and dings to get you on to the next thing on your busy schedule. It just never ends. Take the dinner out of the oven. Pick the kids up from practice. That person you haven't talked to in a long time wants you to check on Facebook so you can see what they're having for dinner. Read this email. Reply to this text. Answer this call. And on it goes. I was reading an article, true story, an article about how intrusive and disruptive all these notifications are. And the website on which I was reading this article pops up a notification asking for my permission to send me more notifications. I'm clicking no, no more. This morning I want to talk about an ancient solution to what we see as a very modern problem. Now, I don't really think it's a new problem. We just experience it in modern ways. On Wednesday night, I was teaching my Revelation class. And right in the middle of class, we had that ubiquitous noise of modern life. Somebody's phone was vibrating. Now, normally, you know, it vibrates a couple times, somebody checks it, turns it off, but it kept going. And before you know it, we're all checking our phones. Is it me? Who is it? And we never did find the guilty party. So if you're in my class and you need some confession this morning, no. I don't think that ever happened to Jesus and the apostles. You know, Jesus has got the 12 and they're sitting down and Jesus is teaching them. And the kingdom of heaven's like a net. And Jesus looks at Peter because it's usually him. And Peter's like, not me. And he looks at his brother Andrew, and Andrew's giving the side eye to James and John. But I do think that if we were to walk through the streets of ancient Jerusalem or Corinth or Rome, we would find people whose lives are filled with hurry, scurry, and worry. Just like our own. We're doing a series called Walking with God, where we are exploring spiritual habits for ordinary people. And these are biblical practices that deepen your relationship with God, they grow you spiritually, and they enable you to get more out of and give more to life. From the earliest days of church history, these habits have been called spiritual disciplines. They are time-tested, proven, effective ways for walking with God. Now, this morning, we want to look at a pair of habits called silence and solitude. And while it's possible to break them apart and consider them as separate disciplines, they are so closely intertwined with each other, it serves us well to look at them as a package deal. Silence helps create solitude. It's hard to have solitude without silence. And so we'll look at them together. Now, silence and solitude are all about making space. Creating space, both in your life, but most importantly, in your heart and your mind, for God to do deeper work in your life. This part might sound surprising, but silence and solitude are as essential to our spiritual formation as is fellowship. Just as we need times of community, like a Sunday morning with joyful celebration, we also need times where we can withdraw to a quiet place. I want you to turn in your Bibles to Mark chapter 1, because our example in this is Jesus himself. Silence and solitude played a crucial role in the life and ministry of Jesus. And in Mark chapter 1, we get a glimpse at a very busy day in Jesus' life. A 24-hour period that was chock full of activity. It begins in verse 21, but we're not going to read through the whole text. But it begins with a synagogue service. And the synagogue service would itself have lasted several hours. And a part of the synagogue service was that people within the synagogue would be called upon to read a passage from the Old Testament and then to teach on that passage. And Jesus is one of those that was called upon to teach that morning. And so Jesus is teaching, and it creates some excitement because Mark tells us that Jesus taught with a power and an authority that nobody else had. And while Jesus is teaching, there's all of a sudden a stir out in the crowd, a commotion. Somebody in synagogue that day was possessed of an unclean spirit. And Jesus cleanses this man of an unclean spirit. So it's already been a busy day in synagogue. After synagogue is over, Jesus and the disciples, they go to the home of Peter's mother-in-law. Peter was a married man. But Peter's mother-in-law is sick. And so Jesus does his second miracle of the day, and he heals Peter's mother-in-law. So she's back up on her feet. She's feeling better. And the text tells us that she sets about to serving Jesus and the disciples. And what that means is fixing dinner. And so this is the time of day when most of us would be kicking off our shoes, putting our feet up, calling it a day. It's already been a busy day for Jesus. But look at verse 32 and see what happens. That evening after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons. The whole town shows up, it says. And after what had to have been a very busy night, we can only presume that Jesus went to bed late. So what does he do the next day? Sleep in, right? Take a few hours. But in verses 35 through 37, John Mark writes this: "Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him, and when they found him, they exclaimed, 'Everyone is looking for you.'" Everyone is looking for Jesus. They want him to do this. They want him to do that. And you know what? Jesus doesn't care. Because Jesus needed some time with his heavenly Father. Never let the urgent become the enemy of the important. This wasn't just a one-time thing for Jesus. It was a regular habit. It was his practice. We could even say it was a spiritual discipline. Listen to what Luke writes in Luke 5:15-16. "Yet the news about him spread all the more, so that the crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed." Now, if even the Son of God needed times of silence and solitude, what about you? Don't you think we need it too? My whole point this morning is that we all need places of solitude. We all need times where we can withdraw and have a quiet time with our Creator. We need places where we can escape everything that crowds in on us in our lives and disconnects us from our Heavenly Father. Now, for silence and solitude to become an essential part of our walk with God, we first need to understand why. Why? Because it can be hard for a people who are constantly on. We're always connected. We are always online. We're always on call. It can be hard for us to seek solitude and silence, because our lives are a constant stream of information, of data, of audio, of video. It used to be just the newspaper and the radio and the television. And now it's our phones, it's our tablets, it's our laptops, it's our desktops, it's our Amazon Alexas and our Google Homes. All the time. And some of us actually avoid solitude and silence. And we avoid solitude and silence because we fear being alone. Now, this is a very primal fear. It is one of the earliest fears we experience in our childhood, being left alone. And some of you have some very vivid memories of a time when you were a little kid and you were forgotten. You were left behind. And so what we do is we surround ourselves with lots of activity and lots of people. But the problem is that loneliness can still isolate your soul no matter how many people are around you. But here's what you need to understand about silence and solitude. It is not a call to loneliness. It's not about being alone. It's about being alone with God. And there is a big difference. You see, loneliness is a place absent of love and affection. But silence and solitude is a place where we can feel His love more deeply. It is a place where we can experience His divine affection more intimately. Silence and solitude aren't primarily about disconnecting from other people. We only disconnect from other people so that we can more fully connect with God, to be alone with Him. I mean, what do you do when you fall in love? What does someone in love want to do? They want to be with the one they love, right? And that can be greater than a desire. It can feel like a desperate need. You don't even want to go out, you know, as a large group of friends with them. You don't just want to go out as a family. You want to go just the two of you. Can we go somewhere, just you and I? Can we be alone together? Think of it this way. silence and solitude are about being in love with God, about being in love with your Creator. It's like having a date night with God, just you and your Creator and your Savior. That's why we do it. Next comes the what. What do we do during our time of silence and solitude? Now, this part might be hard for some of us to grasp, because some of us always have an agenda. Some of us always have a to-do list. You know, when we get the end of something, we want to be able to look back and say, I accomplished that. So what I want to explain here, I'm going to borrow somebody else's words. Bill Gaultier is a psychologist. He is a committed follower of Christ. And he has a whole ministry devoted to what's called soul care. And he has pinpointed this area of silence and solitude as being one of the biggest areas that we're missing from our walks with God right now. And he says that the point of your time in solitude and silence, listen to this, the point of your time in solitude and silence is to do nothing. Don't try to make anything happen. It is a time to be, not to do. The keynote speaker at the conference Teresa and I went to a couple of weeks ago reminded us several times that we are human beings, not human doings. And it's easy for us to forget that because so often we derive our identity, our sense of self-worth from what we do. This is especially true of pastors. We identify ourselves by what we do. I'm a preacher. That's what I do. And the question he asked us was, who will you be when you no longer do what you do? And you know what? I think that's a soul-searching question, not just for pastors, but for a lot of you as well. Who will you be when you no longer do what you do? And silence and solitude is a time to stop doing, stop producing, stop pleasing other people, stop entertaining yourself, stop obsessing about everything, and simply be with God. In silence and solitude, you don't need to fix anything, answer anything, resolve anything. You are just simply with Him. Go back to my date night analogy. Our best times alone with another person aren't those times that are scheduled by itineraries full of scheduled activities. They're simply those times that we're alone with someone. Intimacy is not built by checking off items on an agenda. Slow down. Stop. Be quiet. And simply be with Him. One author says, it is the opposite of spacing out. It is spacing in. I like that analogy. It is a time to go totally analog and completely organic in your relationship with God. You don't need a prayer list. You don't need a Bible study plan. You are completely just in that moment. Not to post on Facebook, not to share with anybody else, but simply to be with Him. And in that place of silence and solitude, you can accept God's invitation. Be still and know that I am God. See, a part of the discipline of silence isn't just to quiet everything around us. It's to quiet everything within us. Those thoughts that are constantly racing through our heads, those voices that scream inside. It's quiet. And it's not that we don't pray or don't read our Bibles or do anything during a time of silence and solitude. But we learn to pray from a quiet heart. We learn to read and meditate and learn from a place of stillness. And there we can listen and we can learn and simply enjoy being with Him. Now, the next question that presses in on us is where? Where can I find this mystical place of solitude and silence? Because last time I checked, I'm not Superman. I don't have a fortress of solitude. And these days, it's even hard to find a phone booth. So where do you go? Well, the where answer will be different for each one of us, but your where will be where you can go and be free of distraction and you can focus on God. And it begins with finding a daily quiet place. A daily place where you can catch a few minutes just alone with God. A few minutes here or a few minutes there. It might be your backyard. It might be a room in your house. I've even known people who go into a closet and they shut off the lights. Darkness is a good way to at least cut out the visual distractions. And this might sound kind of weird, but it's true. Your shower can make a great prayer closet. You know, for a lot of people, their 5 minutes in the shower is the only time in the day they're not connected, not online, not on call. Great prayer closet. Sarah Wilson was sharing with me that one of you ladies in her Sunday school class, every day at lunch, gets out of the office, leaves the ringing phones, leaves all the people, and just goes out to her car where she eats lunch and reads her Bible in the car. And what a creative way to find a place of silence and solitude in an otherwise busy day. But sometimes, we need more than 5 minutes here or 30 minutes there. We need that date with God. Where do we go for that? Well, let me give you just a couple of practical suggestions. These come both from the examples of Jesus and my own experience. And the first suggestion is this. Go somewhere. Go somewhere else. Throughout the Gospels, we read that Jesus withdrew. He left. He went off to some other place. It'll say a place of solitude, a lonely place, a desolate place. But He goes somewhere else. And I know for me personally, when I need a date with God, I've got to get out of Dodge. I can't do it here at the church. I can't do it at home. I've got to go somewhere else. The second practical suggestion is this. Nature can help. Those that have pursued the spiritual disciplines down through church history, especially this discipline of silence and solitude, repeatedly testify that creation helps channel the Creator. That the beauty of nature can help you focus on the beauty of nature's Maker. And we see that in Jesus' examples. How many times is He going up into a mountain, or He goes to the Garden of Gethsemane, or He gets in a boat and He sails out on the water? Nature can be helpful. And over the years, I have found a number of places that help me in this time with God. When I was in Bible college and I first began to take seriously the spiritual disciplines and began to pursue the spiritual disciplines in my own life, the place that I found was helpful for me were the ruins of lead and zinc mines from World War I that dotted the landscape around Joplin and Webb City. And there, the chat piles, they looked like a desolate landscape that in my mind reminded me of an alien terrain that was far, far away from the demands of tests and homework, the inconsideration of dorm mates, the temptation of girls, and just all of the pressures of college life on campus just a few miles away. In my very first ministry, my place of solitude was a tree stump on Dorothy Brazel's farm next to a creek. Dorothy was an elderly widow in the church. I would go over there once a week to have lunch with her, and I found a place of respite there on her farm. In Iowa, for just a couple of dollars, I could get a few hours in paradise. They had a botanical center that was inside of a dome. So, Claude, I could go in that dome, and it was like being on a Caribbean island. That was a good place to pray, let me tell you. When I was in Virginia, if the weather was nice, it was up on Skyline Drive in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Beautiful. In Oklahoma, it was in a lawn chair in a homemade wooden tree stand. It's a pretty good place to get close to God, isn't it, Terry? Here in Missouri, I found a little spot that I like. It's in Springfield. It's at Sequoia Park. I hope I'm saying that right. But there's a spot there with a cliff on one side. Am I butchering that? Sequoia. I kept wanting to call it Sequatoya, so, you know, I'm doing better. Sequoia Park. Yeah, there's a cliff on one side and a stand of trees on the other, and there's just enough room there, Sean, for me to plop a chair. Me and my Bible, I'm good. Now, it doesn't have to be in nature. Maybe it's a loft in a barn. It's a storage building with no phone lines. It's the cab of your truck. It doesn't matter as long as you can focus on God and be free of distraction. But a part of where isn't geographical. A part of where is the space that you create. You need to create your own space because you can find the most beautiful spot. But if your phone is constantly going off, it isn't going to do you any good. You know, when I have a date night with my wife, she's not very fond if I spend half of the evening on my phone. Any of the other wives like that? You know, get off of Facebook. Don't be checking email. Don't answer the text. And I don't think it's any different when we're alone with God. Turn your phone off. Leave it in the car. Leave it at home. And I love Bible apps. I love my Olive Tree. I love my YouVersion. I love having an audio Bible right there in my pocket that I can listen to while I ride my bike. But a time of silence and solitude, I really believe, is one of those times that a paper Bible is the way to go. Because even if you put your phone in airplane mode, the temptation to distraction is just, at least for me, it's too great. I mean, you start off and you're reading Philippians, and next thing you know, you're playing Minecraft. You know? That's not what a time of silence and solitude is all about. So you help create your own space. The last question I want to deal with this morning is when. When? How often do we need to do this? Well, the daily quiet place, the 5 minutes in the shower, the lunch break, the 15-minute walk through Hidden Waters Park, those can be daily occurrences. But how often do we need that more prolonged period, that date with God? Well, Richard Foster, who literally wrote the book on spiritual disciplines called The Celebration of Discipline, he suggests 4 times a year that we need maybe half a day or so with God. I can't point to a number of times on a calendar, but what I do want to do is point to a number of occasions in Jesus' life where a time of solitude and silence was a good thing to do. And I think it would be true for our lives as well. The first one is this: to prepare for a big challenge or a big decision. You got something big coming up in your life? You've got to make an important decision? Consider withdrawing and having a quiet time in a quiet place with God. In Luke chapter 6, Jesus has a very big decision to make. Jesus has hundreds of disciples, hundreds of followers. And out of all of these followers, he's got to pick 12 who are going to live with him and share life with him. They're going to do life together, and they're going to become his apostles. And so what does Jesus do to prepare for this big decision? In verses 12 and 13, this is what we read. In these days, he went out to the mountain to pray. And all night he continued in prayer to God. And when day came, he called his disciples and chose from them 12 whom he named apostles. And we all recall how Jesus prepared the night before his crucifixion. He sought the solace of the Garden of Gethsemane. So, I mean, let's say you're considering a job change. You're considering asking someone to marry you or answering that big question. You and your spouse are talking about maybe adopting a child, or you're thinking about buying a house, or making a decision that could really change your financial picture. You're dealing with a huge relationship issue. And how are you going to deal with this relationship issue? Those can all be times to say, you know what? I need to go spend some time alone with God. On the flip side, you might need to spend some time alone with God to reflect on a momentous event in your life. Something big has already happened. You just got married. You just started a new job. You just had a baby. You just bought a new house. That's a good time to do this. Now, our busy minds want to protest at this point. Wait a minute. I can't do it then. I'm so busy. I just started this job. I've got to do this and this. And we just had this kid, and you wouldn't believe all the stuff we've got to do. And we think of all the reasons why we can't do it. The problem is, do you realize that it's often after a big event in our lives that we are most vulnerable? And I think of the prophet Elijah. And the prophet Elijah, who had this big moment in his life. He had the big showdown with the prophets of Baal. And there it's Elijah against several hundred false prophets. And they both build their altars, and they put sacrifices on their altars. And the false prophets go first. They pray to their false gods to accept their sacrifice. And of course, these idols of wood and stone don't answer. And they're out there singing and dancing and cutting themselves. And then it's Elijah's turn. And Elijah, he digs a moat all the way around his altar. He drenches the whole thing in water. And then he prays. And the living God of the universe hears that prayer. And fire comes down from heaven and not only consumes the sacrifice, but the altar, the water, the other altar, everything. Huge victory for Elijah. You know, you might think that after that, Elijah's like, yeah. You know, where's that evil Queen Jezebel? You know, come talk to me now. I'll show you who's boss. No. Very next thing we see from Elijah is he's curled up in a fetal position and he's begging God to let him die because he's terrified of evil Queen Jezebel. We're vulnerable after those big moments. And it's when our time and attention are most in demand that maybe we most desperately need to pull out and spend some time with God. In Matthew 14, we read of one of the biggest events in the life and ministry of Jesus. He feeds the 5,000. And that's just the men. You throw in the women and the children, we're in the neighborhood of 15,000 people. It is the peak of Jesus' popularity. He is so popular at this point, they want to make him king. So you would think, if Jesus followed the rules of modern PR, he'd be out on a book tour, right? He'd be doing the talk show circuit. No. Here's what we read in verse 23. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. The more the pressure and demands of life pressed in on Jesus, the more he needed to draw deeply from the well of his relationship with the Father. Another time that we may need to have a time of silence and solitude is to respond to a grievous or tragic event. We read of another event in Matthew 14, the death of John the Baptist. He is beheaded by King Herod. And Herod does this as a stunt to impress a pretty girl. And we read in verse 13. And remember that John the Baptist is a close friend of Jesus. He is Jesus' cousin. And it was his ministry that set the stage for Jesus. All right? I mean, John the Baptist and Jesus go together hand in hand. And in verse 13, we read this. Now, when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a desolate place by himself. Now, I know in our culture, we often respond to grief and tragedy by surrounding ourselves with friends and family. And that's a good thing. But a healthy part of the grieving process can also be to spend a few hours alone with God. Now, we don't do this to go feel sorry for ourselves, to have a pity party, to go wallow in our sadness. We do this to seek the solace of the one who knows us best and the affection of the one who loves us most. And so it can be completely fine to tell your loved ones, you know what, I just need this one day. I need this morning or I need this afternoon. I'll be okay. I'll be back, but just let me be. I need this time. So maybe if you're dealing with the death of a loved one, maybe a divorce, a loss of a job, any tragic or grievous event in your life can be an appropriate time to spend a few hours alone with God. The final occasion where we should seek the solace of a quiet place is simply to rest. Sometimes our souls need a place to refresh and renew in the presence of God. Now we understand that our minds get exhausted, our bodies get weary, but we aren't just mind and body. We are mind, body, and soul. And we need that time of rest. In Mark chapter 6, Jesus sent his disciples out on their very first mission trip. And they go out in twos. And they go from town to town and they're preaching and teaching and performing miracles. And then they come back to Jesus. And we pick up the story in verse 30. The apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while. For many were coming and going and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in a boat to a desolate place by themselves. We are always connected, always online, always on call. The problem is that we are online but disengaged. We are connected but isolated. And our connections serve not only to disconnect us from each other, they serve to disconnect us from God. And it can be hard to be still and know that He is God when our lives are a constant flurry of activity and we're trying to do a dozen things. It can be hard to hear His still, small voice with the constant dissonance of noise of modern life. Consider this your invitation to quiet. This is your invitation to de-stress and declutter your soul. It's your invitation to fall in love with God all over again. Or maybe for the very first time. Think about it this way. The Creator of the entire universe wants to be alone with you. Now, I get it. Theologically, technically speaking, God is omnipresent and He can't go anywhere to be alone, truly. But you catch my meaning. He wants some time, just you and Him. That's how much He loves you. I want to challenge you to do two things this morning. In your bulletins, and the sermon outline there at the end, there's a little place there for some application, and there's a couple things there. And the first one is called My Daily Quiet Place. I want you to find a place in your daily life where you can just catch a few minutes alone with God. Maybe it's 5 minutes in the morning in the shower. Maybe it's at night, you know, while the kids are in the tub. Maybe something at lunch break. Maybe it's 30 minutes while you work out. But a daily quiet place. And this is something, if you already have a place, you can write that in there. But you can probably think of a place right now where that can be your daily prayer closet, if you will. The second one is called My Date with God. And there's two lines there, when and where. And what I want you to do this week is schedule a date with God. Now, the date doesn't have to happen this week. I just want you to get it scheduled this week. And you don't have to do it right now, this second. You can take this home. You can think about it, talk about it, pray about it. But I really want to challenge you to schedule a date with God. And you need to pick a time, and you need to pick a place. And I would encourage you, go somewhere that's not in your usual place of activities. And then I would love to hear back from you. I'd like to hear where your daily quiet place is. I'd like to hear about your date with God when you have that. Where did you go? Why did you pick that place? How did it go? And here's what I want to encourage you to do. When you plan this date with God, plan for 3 to 4 hours alone with God. Of unscripted time. Not a huge to-do list, but just unscripted, unprompted time with God. Now, if you are completely new to this, you've never done anything like this before, you are new to the spiritual disciplines, you've never spent time alone with God, and this idea of 3 to 4 hours of unscripted time is terrifying to you, let me challenge you with this. 1 hour. Start with just 1 hour. 1 hour that doesn't have something really pressing in on both sides of it, but 1 hour just alone with God. And see what can happen during that time. And spend that time with God. And just say, God, for the next hour, the next 3 hours, I'm all yours. And go from there. And I would love to hear how that goes. Would you please stand and pray with me?